Blog Talk Radio.
I'm your host, Kyle Carroll. Our show is brought to you tonight by MyMMAnews.com, your number one source for MMA news. Be sure to follow them on social media at MyMMAnews. Follow myself, Kyle Carroll, at Jiblitz77 on Twitter. That's JIBLITZ77. And you can find a lot of my work on Facebook at Carroll's Corner MMA. So be sure to check that out as well. If you want to call in with any questions, be sure to call in at 323-870-4011. And tonight's show is co-hosted by Eric Dame of 1010 Wins. He'll be joining us tonight. And then we're supposed to have Jamal Red Pottinger on. We haven't been able to get him on the line, but hopefully we can. And then Steve Inoshima, who will be calling in about 15 minutes. So, Eric, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing well, Kyle. You know, I was hoping that Jamal would be here because he's much more interesting than I am. But, you know, until we get a hold of him, we'll just have to deal with you and me, I guess.
I'm looking forward to it. Eric, you've been in a ringside announcer, a broadcaster for a couple MMA shows on Long Island. You want to tell us how, I guess, you got into that and what were your thoughts on that, like the MMA show in the area?
Well, originally I got into MMA being in the military and being overseas. I was in the Navy for 13 years, and when you're stationed overseas, you don't get regular television from the States. You get what's called the American Forces Network, AFN, and on AFN, you have free UFC events. Like those things that we pay now $60 for to watch at home on the TV, you get them for free on AFN. So one of those benefits from being in the military and being overseas. I started watching it, you know, quite a few years ago, probably 2007, 2008 is when I really got into it. And I just became a big fan and started following the sport regularly, following what was going on, following it on social media. Right, I guess that was right around the time, actually, that I started getting on Facebook and not Twitter at that point, but MySpace. You remember when MySpace was a thing?
That was years ago.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I started following it then and just as a fan, just watching it and enjoying it and learning about it from friends of mine who were a little bit more into it than I was. And as I came home, I started following it more and more and closer and closer. And eventually, while I was one of those, a non-traditional student at Hofstra University, one of the best broadcasting universities in the entire nation. If you want to work in radio and TV, can't recommend Hofstra University highly enough. While I was there, I was working at the radio station, and Nick Canobio, who is the CEO of KTFO Fights, previously known as Platinum Gloves. Now they've got a new name with this new merger going on, Triton. Mm-hmm. So Nick contacted my friend at the radio station and said, hey, you know, I've heard you broadcasting sports things. Do you think you'd be interested in this? He said, I don't know enough about mixed martial arts, but I know a guy who does. And that's how I got in touch with Nick, and Nick brought me out there to broadcast at the time Platinum Gloves, called a couple of called a fight with Eric Ott as my co-commentator, who's going to be fighting at the World's Collide event with Triton. And after that, called fights with Aljamain the Funkmaster Sterling. I hooked that up. I'd met him through my radio show, so I brought him in to be the my color commentary gentleman on the second fight that I called for them. And then the third fights I called with Ryan Laborious Castro, another amateur fighter, just like Eric Ott. And really, it was my first chance, despite being a professional broadcaster for the better part of two decades, it was my first chance to do MMA live, sitting right there at the cage. And actually, that's where I met you, my very first show. I met you, and you were taking some good pictures. You actually managed to make me look good in some of those photos, which is the sign of a good photographer. If you can make me look good in a photo, you can make anybody look good in a photo. So got to call those fights with Eric Ott the first time, with Aljo the second time, with Ryan the third time, and gained even more of an appreciation for mixed martial arts. Really seeing at the amateur level the abilities that people have where, you know, I think a lot of people think, and actually I just saw a post on Facebook by a former UFC fighter, that UFC is all there is when it comes to mixed martial arts. But really, there's so much beyond that, you know? There are the smaller professional promotions. And then, of course, you have the amateur promotions all around the country, like what we have going on out here on Long Island. And there's so much going on, so many amazing fighters that getting the opportunity to see some of them, like Luis the Assassin Gonzalez, getting to see him, getting to see all these different guys that got to fight out here on Long Island right in front of me. It was incredible. It was amazing to be able to sit there and see the skills that these people have honed. You know, it's incredibly impressive. And while working as the broadcaster and the play-by-play guy, I just hope that I was able to put that across, how amazing it was to be sitting there and seeing it in person.
You know, Eric, it's amazing what these young athletes that aren't even being paid are able to do inside the cage, and how much it amazes me actually how much effort and work they put into something that, like I said, you're not getting paid for. They consider it like a full time job, and like every fight continues, some people waver off, and that's the end of their career. They give it a chance, but a lot of these guys they have hopes and dreams to make it to the next level at the UFC level or RFA, which actually now just ended. The last shows either just happened the other this
right.
weekend or is coming up. But it's amazing how much work they put in. And the amazing part is the amount of how much the level has progressed. The talent level has gone from my 3 years being here in the New York area covering MMA has drastically improved. It's insane.
Right. It has. And what's amazing as well is to see these guys, the majority of which at the amateur level know they're not dumb guys. They know they're probably never going to be Conor McGregor. You know, they're never going to be fighting the main event at the UFC, the main event at Bellator, the main event at World Series of Fighting. They know that's not in the cards, but that they're willing to go out there and sacrifice their bodies, sacrifice their health, to see how hard some of these guys hit and to just want to go out and do it for, you know, it's a cliche, but for the love of the game, to watch people go out there and do that when they're not getting paid to do it, that brings actually to me an extra level of impression. You know what I mean? Where
no,
these guys
definitely
aren't getting paid $50,000 to go out there and get punched in the face. They're getting paid $0. They're going out there to do it because they want to test themselves. They want to see how their training has worked. They want to see how it goes. And to me, that gives me an extra level of respect for them.
Oh, a perfect example. You're talking about Eric Ott, who is co-hosting the broadcast with you the first time you did it. He's fighting this week as the co-main event at the middleweight for a middleweight title of Triton Fights now. And
right.
He's a guy I asked him, why do you do it? You're 33 years old. He's like, I absolutely love it. He's like, I love getting in the cage, competing. And he's like, and I love violence. He's like, I love to get in there and just be able to do something you normally wouldn't be able to do. And it is pretty interesting and spectacular to see these guys just get in there just for fun and beat the heck. And they put on a show, that's for sure. Anyone who says
they
don't
do.
Have never watched it.
And Eric is, you know, at 33. I just turned 37 a couple weeks ago, so he's a young buck at 33, old Eric Ott. You know, he's still an up-and-comer, at least in my eyes, because I'm now pushing 40. But Eric, when you meet him, you know, when you meet most pro fighters that I've had the opportunity to meet, not all, but most, are really just the nicest guys, too. If you were to meet Eric Ott, if you were to be sitting next to him on a train on the Long Island Railroad, you would think, wow, this is just a nice guy. He's a cool dude. You
Yep.
would never think this is someone who's going to go out there and kick me in the face to the point where my face doesn't exist anymore. But he's absolutely capable of that. So, you know, meeting guys like him, meeting guys like Ryan Castro, who I got to call the fights with as well, just a really nice gentleman. Aljo Sterling, you know, he's obviously, you know, towards the top of the food chain with the UFC, one of the top 10 ranked bantamweights in the world. But getting to meet these guys and the humility and just the general, I don't know how to put it really, the general attitude that they have, they're nice guys. Now, they're capable of killing you with their bare hands, and you do have to remember that. But when talking to them just on a person-to-person level, it's like, all right, this is a guy who he may be fighting live on TV. He may be fighting for KTFO. He may be fighting for whomever. But these are guys who, you know, you just meet them, and they're people who enjoy challenging themselves. And I think there's something that most people respect about someone that wants to challenge themselves, whether it's for money, whether it's not for money, just meeting these guys who are willing to go out there and do it. Because how many of us, and I'm sure, you know, today I was at work today on the train home, this guy on the train put his feet on the seat next to me, and I thought to myself, oh, man, oh, I want to get this guy. I want to get him so good. But you know what? I thought better of it, and I didn't want to get involved with that. I'm also getting old, and my body starts to hurt in weird places at weird times. So, you know, seeing these guys like Eric Ott that you mentioned, he's fighting for a title at 33 years old. 33 years old with years of training in martial arts, years of fighting against people in the cage. Just seeing people willing to do that, seeing people that push themselves that far, it's incredible to me. It's something that, you know, hey, better them than me, and better that I get to watch them do it than not get to watch them do it.
Definitely. And you know what's crazy, is, like you mentioned, is the fact that all these guys, if you run into them, where, like you said, on the train, next to them on the train, they are some of the nicest guys in of all sports. Because you run into like a lot of other pro athletes, they'll try and ignore people. They want to stay away. They don't want to give out autographs. These guys, they love signing things. They love talking with you. And it was funny because after I met Aljamain Sterling at the venue co-broadcast with him at the KTFO, I ran
right.
into him at the NCAA championships in Penn Station waiting for the train. And he's with the Gian Vellante. And I just happened to be standing next to him. And then Sparky, he's like, hey, I remember you. And we just start shooting the shit with him. And it's funny.
Yeah.
And they're just super nice guys chatting, talking about a little MMA, talking about wrestling that we were watching, the NCAA
yeah.
championships. But yeah,
well,
they're some of the nicest guys.
And that's the other interesting thing that you find, like Gian Vellante, who went to my alma mater, Hofstra University, just like Chris
yep.
Weidman did. We produce some pretty good fighters out of Hofstra. So by, you know, just by being associated with them, I think of myself as like a UFC caliber fighter. Okay, maybe not so much. But when you find out the athletic backgrounds, like Gian Vellante was a linebacker on the Hofstra University football team.
Yep.
That's a team that doesn't exist anymore. Hofstra got rid of football quite a
oh, yeah.
few years back.
I should bring that
but
back.
He, yeah, well, there's a lot of questions about finances there. I understand why they did it, but let's not go into that. He played college football, Division I college football, on a team with Willie Colon, who played in the NFL with, you know, guys like Devery Henderson. This is a guy who was a top-flight college athlete. Chris Weidman was an All-American college wrestler, both when he was at Nassau Community College and then after he moved to Hofstra University. He was an All-American wrestler the whole time he was there, and that's the other thing that
hello?
I think when you talk to – oh, hello.
Oh, we got Steve.
Hey,
yeah,
what's going
you
know, on?
How you doing, Steve?
I'm good, man. Just got out of work.
Awesome, awesome.
I got out of work a while ago. I win.
We have Eric Dame on the line as well from 1010 Wins. He's co-broadcasted some of the KTFO fights, and he's on the line co-hosting as well. He was actually just talking about Vellante and the level of some of these Long Island guys competing in UFC and the backgrounds that.
Oh yeah.
Right, and my point was that when you look at MMA fighters, you often find that I think a lot of people who aren't that familiar with the sport think, oh, these are guys that just like to get into bar fights, and now they do it professionally or they do it on an amateur level. But, you know, look at Long Island's biggest fighters. When you look at Vellante, was a Division I linebacker, Chris Weidman, Division I All-American wrestler, Aljamain Sterling went to SUNY Cortland. He was a wrestler there, All-American there, I believe. I could be a little bit wrong.
Yeah, I believe
that.
He was, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, when you look at guys like that, when you get into MMA, some people just come into it from a martial arts background, but really, I think as time goes on, we're finding more and more people from a diverse athletic background. So, my question to you, coming up on your upcoming fight, is, what was your athletic background? Were you just a martial artist when you came into it, or were you something else before that?
I was playing sports, mainly like soccer, basketball, track, and then just getting into fights when I was younger. Just being the age I'm at, I'm an 84 baby. As I was growing up, that was typical, man, just getting into fights, even fighting with your friends, and then just getting into street fights.
Right.
Not like serious like gang fights, but you know what I mean, like, this town. I'm going to kick your ass.
Well, 84
makes
you...
my language. I'm just kind of in the middle of a weight cut. My mouth is slipping now.
That's okay.
Usually very more censored.
You're dehydrated and lacking food right now, I imagine. With
yeah, lack of carbs.
Up.
The carbs are killing me.
well, don't worry about the language.
Being a fighter. Kyle and I, we're not fighters, so we can eat all the carbs we want. I had like 3 pounds
bastard.
Of spaghetti tonight.
Oh,
so
oh,
good.
I can't wait to be you.
I'm going to torture you with that. So an 84 baby, you said, and I was born in 79, and I just turned 37, so that makes you like 32,
only
31.
33 soon.
33 soon. There you go. So how long have you been fighting for?
Oh, about 7 to 8 years. Like, in the amateur circuit, about 7 years. I've been doing tournaments for like 10 years.
Now, one of the things that we were talking about is how, you know, the difference between professional fighters and amateur fighters, and you being an amateur fighter at this point, what makes you want to do it? You're not getting paid to do it, so why do you want to do this?
I just do it just to see where I'm going to go. It's the self-satisfaction. It's everything. Ever since I started teaching, it just makes me want to keep doing it. The aspect, and when you're in there, it's just you. Actually, I used to be in a band also, and that, like, it counts, you need to rely on too many people, and fighting is just you. And, achievement of something that you did, that you didn't have to worry about other people's accountability is, like, the greatest part about it. That's what's got me continue going, and I'm just trying to see how far I go.
So you're looking to see how far you can go.
What
currently is your record right now? And you want to tell us a little bit about your fight coming up this Friday.
This Friday, my record is 7 kickboxing fights, 6 wins, 1 loss, and. I have 1 loss in MMA and a draw in combat jiu-jitsu, which was like before MMA was even getting close to being legalized in New York. And all my fights are in New York.
Okay.
The fight coming up, it's gonna be a brawl. Let's put it that way. This isn't gonna be a wrestling match. I know.
Right.
I'm expecting this kid to come in with his. With his grappling, his MMA, of course MMA, but his wrestling. A lot of those guys over there are wrestlers. I'm going to keep it standing.
Well,
if they have to go to the ground, we'll go to the ground. Yeah,
here's a question that I've asked a lot of amateur fighters that I've talked to before,
mm-hmm.
is, you know, if we're talking about, you know, the professionals, the guys in the UFC, Bellator, World Series, pick any professional organization, they have tape that they can go back to and watch of these other guys. They know the other guy's game plan. In the amateur world, oftentimes you just have to go by, well, this guy won by submission, so I assume he's a grappler. Yes. So how difficult is it for you as an amateur fighter going in and not knowing everything about the guy that you're going to face the professionals do?
That's the funny thing. I go in thinking everyone's an animal. I'm fighting an animal. It's like the Hulk versus me, David versus Goliath every time. I'm expecting him to be well-rounded. Anything can happen. I never underestimate anybody.
Right. Now,
just make sure.
Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say I just make sure I don't. I check. I cross all my T's, dot all my I's. Make sure everything's all set. And I make sure I'm capable of everything that I can do.
One of the interesting things, and I think Kyle will back me up on this, when you go to an amateur MMA event, you see about a 50-50 split on guys who seem to know what they're doing and guys who seem to have just gotten in there on a whim.
Yes, that does happen.
Yeah, I mean, where I've seen guys, you know, I saw one fight that I called where the fighter destroyed him within 30 seconds, and we thought, wow, this guy's a great fighter. And then the next time I saw the guy who destroyed him fight, he got knocked out cold within a minute.
That'll happen.
You know, it's one of those things where in the amateur world, how difficult for you do you think it is to judge the level of your opponent heading into it?
It's very hard. It's just like it's like life. You can't predict what's going to happen tomorrow. Tomorrow, everyone could die.
Wow, that's a very funny idea that you threw out there. So, hey, tomorrow, if everybody dies, you heard it here first.
It's like, especially during this time of the year, when every time I fight during this time of year, everyone's been passing away. Like, last year, two of my friends had passed away during this time. Like, anything could happen any moment. You just go with it. You do as best as you can do. The only thing you do, really, in my opinion, is persevere, not give up. As long as you maintain discipline, self-discipline, I mean, and perseverance, you'll make it.
Can you consider this something as, like, I wouldn't say bucket list, but something that you wanted to scratch off so you
absolutely.
Don't regret it?
I meant to just do one and just be satisfied, and once I did one, I'm like, I was hooked.
Yeah. And as you bring up, the sunny idea of people dying all the time, Alan Thicke died tonight. You were born in 84, so I'm sure you remember growing pains. Alan Thicke.
Oh, my God, no
growing
way.
Pains. Yeah.
There we go. Like, see, everyone just, it's just that
Mr.
time
Seaver.
Of year.
69 Maybe, years
yeah,
old.
Oh,
yeah.
My God.
Yeah, 69. I mean, and actually, if you go back and look him up, what you'll find out that's really interesting about him, he wrote the theme songs to a whole bunch of sitcoms that he wasn't even on going back through the days. I think he wrote Different Strokes. I think he wrote the theme songs to Different Strokes and all that stuff. But when it comes to your preparation and looking at that, you know, as you talked about it, the mortality of people. Hey, your friends have died, your family members die, everybody dies.
Yeah.
Is it wanting to challenge yourself like, hey, you know, if I were to die tomorrow, I don't want to have left something on the table, like getting out there and proving myself in a physical way? Is that what really drives
Absolutely.
You to fight?
Absolutely. That is definitely part of it. You know, it's like when you look back, you only have, as a fighter, you only have a certain lifespan. And if you don't, like, you never want to live life with regret, so you got to do everything that you want to do when you can, you know, and when you can is now, usually. If you wait, you'll never get it.
When you say fighters have a lifespan, though, don't tell that to my man Tony Kryptonite Lopez, who pulled off another win the other day. Guys,
nice.
he's older than both of us, all three of
wow.
us, and he's still out there doing it. And when you see guys like here's a good question for you at 33 years of age, almost, like you said, when you see guys out there, you know, your Dan Hendersons that are still out there pushing, Randy Couture when he was doing it, Tony Lopez, all those people, how does that make you look at yourself? I mean, at 33, do you think you're near the end of the line, or do you think you're going to keep pushing for a while?
We'll see what happens. I still got more in the tank.
Steve,
definitely motivating.
I spoke to you at the Buffalo Wild Wings.
Yeah, the event.
At the Farmingdale Buffalo Wild Wings. You were telling me you teach a lot of kids and stuff like that.
Yeah.
How has – and then when we talked a little bit about how teaching has kind of opened your eyes to what you're doing, like mistakes when you're doing technique. How has that really improved your game? Because I'm sure being a teacher –
Oh, it's improved it dramatically.
Yeah?
Like I used to – like I mainly started kickboxing to fix my stand-up because, you know, like it looked good when I did it where I was able to push through. Like, there's missing parts of my technique. Even to now, there's always missing parts. You can always keep improving. But as I kept teaching, throughout the week, teaching this week, I'm like, oh, yeah, I can fix this up. This person's doing that. I'm probably doing that. And then when I train with Tiger Sholmes himself, I'm like, oh, he's like correcting me. He's like, you're doing too much. So I bring it back to my students. I'm like, don't do too much. I was doing that.
Here's a question for you. As someone who teaches people, do you think, and I'm not going to tell you what I think, although I do have an opinion on this, do you think that you should at least be at the level where you're able to teach people before you fight, whether at an amateur or professional level?
I think it helps out a lot. I think being able to teach, if you can teach, you should be able to fight. But fighting's not for everybody.
Right. I think what I mean is, should your abilities be at the level where you're able to pass it on to someone? You know, I look at, and I mentioned him earlier, Luis Gonzalez, who trains people. And when you look at the various people who work on it, you know, when we talk about, we're in Long Island, so why not? Aljo Sterling, Chris Weidman, Gian Vellante, not only do they fight, but they also teach classes and they teach people how to fight. So do you think that there should be a minimum level for people to be able to fight, whether at the amateur or professional level? Should someone be at that sensei level for those who are familiar with the old Karate Kid style?
Do you think that's
a requirement?
I think that should be a requirement. And that's become a requirement through the Tiger Sholmes system, like Jimmy Rivera. He became a sensei once he really got going in the pro league. And look at him now. Chances are after – he fights Brian Caraway. Once he gets through Brian Caraway, he's fighting Dominic Cruz.
He could be. Brian Caraway is tough, though, man. My man Aljo lost to Brian. Aljo knows why he lost. He kind of gassed himself early.
Jimmy's something else, man. Jimmy trained under the sensei that's gotten started. I know, I'm nowhere near Jimmy right now. I've trained with Jimmy. I see Jimmy training. That dude is somewhere else.
Right.
He's at another level, and he's so young.
Eric, back to your question. It's funny that you say that because, I think it is important that people should be able to do is have certain abilities in order to teach. But it's kind of crazy because some of the best coaches or teachers have never done this part. Like, look at Bill Belichick. He's never played football, but he's one of the greatest minds in football there ever was.
That's a good point. Some people are watchers. You're absolutely right.
Some people just understand how certain things go.
He probably played on his own.
Yeah, he knows. You know what?
He comes from a football family.
He played football at some point at some level. High school level. Now, I think that I would be a better defensive coordinator than Ken Norton for my Oakland Raiders right now. I think I'd be able to figure out a way to get them to not give up 30 points a game. So you wouldn't need David Carr to throw 450 yards a game. You know what I mean? Like, some people have, and to an extent in MMA, I've been told by some people, I don't know if it's true, I'm one of these people where I understand the sport despite the fact that my old fat ass isn't going to be able to get in there and fight too many people and come out on the victorious edge. You know what I mean? But I understand the sport and I can break it down and I can look at it. And there are people who can do that. There are people who can, be a good teacher and not be a good practitioner for whatever the term is.
That's absolutely true.
Yeah, but I think when it comes to fighting, when it comes to stepping out there to get punched, kicked in the face, taken down, choked out, you should be someone who's not only able to practice it, but someone who is probably able to teach it as well. That's my point, I think, is that we see some people who get out there who, you know, okay, they're willing to step in and they're willing to throw down with somebody and, all right, fantastic for you. But, yeah, I've seen some of those guys get knocked out within 30 seconds, and it's like, oh, man, what were you thinking? Like,
no,
I know
you're absolutely
right. I can take a punch. But I don't want to take a punch from a professional fighter. I'm not stupid. That's the thing. And that's what I want to see a little bit more of on the amateur level is people or people who are at least extremely experienced. When you look at someone, okay, here's another one that we saw fight in KTFO/Platinum Gloves, James Gonzalez, who's now a professional fighter. Fights out of the Sara Longo team. This is a guy who had been training forever. He had been training to fight forever, and then he had been teaching people in Brazilian jiu-jitsu. This is a guy who was prepared, and you would see him on occasion on the amateur level fight against people who were not prepared. And that's something that on the amateur level I'd like to see fixed to some point where, you know, we see people who are definitely qualified. And Kyle, you were at a fight that I was, and James Gonzalez comes up again, where we see a guy at KTFO get in there, and he gets announced that he's fighting out of Sara Longo. And James Gonzalez looks at him and says, I don't know who that asshole is. And then when the guy comes out, after he gets his ass beat, which, yeah, of course that happened, as he's walking out, he's got James Gonzalez, a Brazilian jiu-jitsu, I think maybe black belt at the time, maybe brown, I don't know what he was, but James Gonzalez is a bad, bad man, walking up to him and saying, hey, you're from Sara Longo, huh? And the guy's like, meh, you know, I took the introductory class. That's the thing that I think is a problem at the amateur level, where you get people who can pass things off like that, you know?
Yeah. It's like,
you know, I think
go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I think it's important that now that there is a commission for MMA, that's sanctioned bodies, New York State, it's legal now, and ACC and KTFO, which now Triton Fights, actually doing fights. Well, they're doing the novice fights, where if you have less than two or less fights, you have to wear shin guards and no ground and pound. And I think that's important to prevent a lot of what Eric is talking about, where you get these guys coming in who've never done this, they don't have coaches, they just show up to an event with gym shorts and just jump in there. And I remember at one event, I can't remember where it was, but the guy's cup kept falling out throughout the fight.
He wasn't wearing his jock strap? Jeez.
I think he was just tucking it in his boxes or something, either that or his marbles weren't able to hold it in there, but it fell out twice, and he wasn't even being kicked, he was just moving, it just spilled out.
Oh my god, that's pretty bad.
Even worse than that, at an event, and this was an event that I called that was, you know, it's an amateur fight, but it's a professional event, there was a guy who showed up, and he didn't have a cup, and they had to go find him one.
You're kidding me.
Like, come on, man. Oh, and not only that, but this guy, and I'm sure this guy thought about it afterwards, he did it in front of a UFC fighter. Actually, there were like three UFC fighters in attendance that night. When you don't show up with a cup, that's a problem. And that's a problem beyond
you're not taking it serious, man.
Yeah, well, maybe you've trained, maybe you haven't, but this guy, it wasn't about training or not training. It was about, like, you don't even have the proper protective equipment to show up with. Come on, man. You're going to show up without a mouth guard?
Yeah, it's like coming with the helmet for freaking football. Like, what are you doing?
showing up for basketball barefooted. That's another example. Like, you're not going to do things like that. And mixed martial arts, I think you're right when you said the sanctioning bodies, and in New York, and there was a great article that Jim Genia wrote, and I interviewed him a long time back on my show, that Jim Genia wrote about how within the state of New York, there were amateur promotions that were doing things the right way, and there were amateur promotions where it was like in the parking lot of a Target someplace upstate,
or a soccer field, indoor-outdoor soccer field. Oh, my God.
Oh yeah, where you just now, I think those outsiders have finally been pushed so far outside that if they want to do it, they may be charged with criminal. They may be charged with criminal charges at this
point. They should be, you know.
Yeah, I mean, they're putting people's lives and health at risk. I mean, just stepping into it when everything is set up the right way, you're still putting your health at risk.
And putting people in different weight classes together, it's like, what are you doing? You know.
That's true, but since I weigh about 205 pounds, I want to fight dudes that are like 108 pounds or so. I think that's a fair fight. If they've been training a long time, do they have a weight division that's called like Fatass Who Used to Be a Badass? Because if they do, I think I could be a champion in that weight class.
Well, they got tournaments for that.
That's called PlayStation.
Well, I'm good on that, man. Oh, I created a fighter on UFC on Xbox. I retired undefeated. I beat every fighter at every weight class. It was incredible.
Nice.
I mean, basically, I'm pretty sure I could go professional based on my Xbox UFC production.
That's hysterical.
Steve, now you said you fight at Tiger Showman. You want to tell us a little bit about your gym and kind of like the training aspects that, like, you're leading up to your fight. Like, how's it going for you, this training camp?
It's going good. It's just like, it's another day at work. I get some of my training at my school where I teach. A lot of it's in, court is in Elmwood Park, New Jersey. Some of it's in our other headquarters in Syosset. And then I got some, I'm friends with another former sensei who owns his own school. I train with him. And then I train with one of my other buddies that used to train with Sarah on the side also, just to keep myself sharp, get different timings, just get different feels. So I'm not going stale, you know, just being ready for everything.
Now, Tiger Shulman,
community for sure. Yeah.
Tiger Shulman's, for better or worse, there are a lot of Tiger Shulmans, and when you have a lot of gyms, there are people who start to think of it as, you know, a cookie cutter gym where you don't have, you know, the same focus that you do it, you know, when you just mentioned Sarah. Sarah BJJ has two gyms. Sarah Longo has one. You know, Longo Wyman MMA has one.
Sarah has technically more than two gyms because those maximums are chained off of the Sarah.
Oh, okay. I didn't learn something new every day.
Yeah, I found that out when I was in a tournament. I'm like, this guy just reminds me of like a Sarah guy. I'm like, what the hell is going on here in like one of these grappling tournaments? I'm like, and when I found out what school he was from, he was like, yeah, I'm from Maximum. It's like a Sarah chain. I'm like, that makes sense. I'm like, no wonder why you felt like familiar.
So, well, my point was, I've seen people on social media, you know, the keyboard warriors, they like to pop out there saying, like, oh, Tiger Shulman's, yeah, well, you know what, I got my black belt at, you know, Burger King or whatever, and they compare the two. How does that make you feel as someone who fights out of Tiger Shulman?
That's all right. People can say whatever they want. It's just like, I also have another job at Starbucks. You're going to compare us to Dunkin' Donuts? Yeah. You can keep doing that. You know, when you come in, you get a taste of Tiger Showman's or Starbucks, you'll know it's real. Don't get me wrong, though. There's always a weak link in the chain. Anywhere you go.
Absolutely.
You can't have someone perfect everywhere. It's all in who's running it. And that's going to make the difference.
When I was leaving work a couple months ago, I was heading out of the CBS radio headquarters down there in Manhattan, and Scott Farrell from Farrell on the Bench, I don't know if you know that guy, they're like, you the man, who the man, that guy, he had a Tiger Shulman backpack, and I ended up, we were in the elevator headed down at 2 a.m. after he finished his shift, I finished mine, and I was asking him, hey, you know, Scott, did you train at Tiger Shulman? He said, yeah, you know, I did a little bit there, and I did a little bit here, and he had nothing but good things to say about Tiger Shulman. And what I've noticed is the people who talk shit about Tiger Shulman, they're people who've never been to a Tiger Shulman. Is that something that you've noticed?
Usually. It's usually that, or they took an introduction class and that was it. Or they're just like angry at something. And so they'll vent it on whatever's in front of them. And Tiger Shulman is in front of everybody all the time. So why not?
Yeah.
just be mad at, this is like the cops. The cops are everywhere, so you're going to just be mad at the cops for no reason. Even though that one cop might be the best cop in the world, you just saved like 10 lives. You still yell at him because he's in front of you. Just, that's like the majority of people. People just don't know how to think for themselves. They're just going to place blame because they're upset with themselves.
Right.
Now,
and when people ask me about, like, what mixed martial arts training do you have, I tell them honestly, like, hey, I took an introductory class at Sarah BJJ. Before that, I did the level one of the Modern Army Combatives program. And before that, when I was out in Guam, I did a little bit of rolling out there with some Brazilian jiu-jitsu, like we're talking purple belts and stuff like that, just learning and having fun. How much of a problem do you think it is that I'm trying to phrase my question properly. People who are demanding that, like, oh, you know what? You need to be under Henzo Gracie. You need to be under Matt Serra. You need to be under Tiger Shulman. When there are other places that people don't know about, how much of a problem do you think it is where people have gotten into this mindset of, like, if I don't know the place that you're coming from, it doesn't exist?
I think that's all debatable. You got to try. I actually found Tiger Shulman by accident. Like, I had no idea what the hell Tiger Shulman was when I first started.
Wait. What do you mean by accident? You mean you were looking for, like, an Auntie Annie's
like, literally,
and
I see
all
some,
of a sudden...
I'm working at yogurt and such, and all of a sudden I see these guys come in like, martial arts gear. I'm like, oh, cool, I want to try that out. So I go in and try it out, and I did it for a little while. And then I left because I was trying to pursue a music career with a metal band.
And hell yeah.
All of a sudden, that was like a headache. So I'm like, the sensei I work for, his wife came into my Starbucks. I started working at Starbucks. She came into my store. And she's like, oh, yeah, I got to get it for. And she says his name. I'm like, who the hell are you talking about? She's like, oh, he's a sensei over there. I'm like, sensei? Oh, he's married? I'm like, I thought he was like this monk. I had no idea because I was so naive. I had no idea about martial arts when I first started.
Now, you say you worked at a Starbucks, so you've probably met my wife because I think she's been to every Starbucks that there is in the country. She's been to the original Starbucks out in Washington State, like that one up there in Seattle. It's like a pilgrimage. That was her Hajj, was to go out to the original Starbucks in Seattle.
That's wild.
But you also talk about metal, and that's an interesting thing. And see, I don't know anything about Kyle's musical taste, but to me, metal is the music of MMA. And I'm not specifically talking about new metal, like whatever that god-awful song that the UFC plays whenever their pay-per-view events are about to start. I'm talking about, like, I will sit here, with UFC Fight Pass, I can watch any event, and I'll have some Tool on in the background. I'll have Mastodon.
Yeah,
I'll have some Lamb of God. I'll have all these things playing. It's a beautiful soundtrack, so... That's a good question for you as a metal guy. Do you think metal and even to a different extent, punk, do you think different like cultural aspects play into MMA as well?
Yeah, definitely. You know, like when I'm teaching adult classes, I try to get like some music going and it really pumps people up.
If you're playing Katy Perry, these kids are going to look at you like, what the hell's wrong with him? Why are we playing Katy Perry? I know I'm a California girl, but why are we playing this when we're trying to roll?
It's true. Yeah, mix it up a bit.
Well, nothing I say is not true, so thank you.
Now, how's your weight going into this fight? You got... less than like 2 days till weigh-ins on Thursday night at 5:00. How is the weigh-ins go for you? Is it tough the last 2 days?
During the winter, it sucks.
Yeah.
It's just like because it's cold. There's so much good food around. You just gotta deny yourself.
Well, with the holidays like just passing and coming up.
There's no Thanksgiving for me this year.
Yeah, I was going to say, is that something you try to avoid, or like in the future want to avoid, is fighting around the holidays? Because I'm sure the promoters don't think about it. Yeah.
No, you know what? It's part of the discipline, man. If you're going to be fighting, you got to get through anything.
Okay.
Like, it's like you're going into a fight. You're going to fight somebody on the other side of the cage, inside of a cage. It's just like you just went out to party and then like you think you're gonna fight. Well, I don't think so. Like, my niece was just born a little while ago. I didn't get to see her yet. I didn't get to see any of my family for months since they all live in Massachusetts now. I'm like, these are things I go into the cage with. I'm like, I deny myself that so I can go fight.
So it's a distance thing, because I thought you were saying you didn't get to see your niece that was just born because you thought you might eat her because you were so hungry. That's not
the case,
though, right?
She's that cute, I might end up eating her.
Now, anyone who fights within a month of Thanksgiving, post-Thanksgiving, that's a crazy person, in my opinion.
Oh, I agree with that.
We are a little crazy.
You know, like, I remember high school. When I was senior wrestling, I was coming from football at 256 to 215 for wrestling. And it was, like, the first weigh-in, the, like, first match. And coaches were like, oh, you're going to be on weight? Every day I'd be, like, 5 pounds over what I'd tell him just so he'd leave me alone. And then when it came to weigh-ins the first time against for the first dual meet, you weigh in the morning. And I remember, like, I missed it by, like, a half a pound. He's like, I thought you said you didn't have any. Now, I had, like, half a bagel and probably a thing of water, and I was, like, a pound over. But you get the rest of the day to make the weight. And I was like, yeah, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, I had to sneak – sometimes it just gets to you. I had to sneak it in. But, you guys don't really get – you don't get the rest of the whole day, though, lose that weight or anything like that.
No, you make that weight or not.
I did make it later on that day. Yeah, I did end up making it. It was only a pound, but it sucks when you're trying to lose all that kind of weight in a couple of weeks.
Yeah,
this makes me so glad that all the sports I played in high school, they actually listed my height and weight as higher than what they were. If I were a high school wrestler, I would have had such a complex. But I was playing football, lacrosse, hockey, and all these things. They were like, oh, yeah, this guy's 6 foot, 220 pounds. And I was like, really? I'm 5'10", 170 pounds. Why are you guys putting 2 inches and 30 pounds on me? And I was fine with it. But that's another thing when it comes to cutting weight and when it comes to the new regulations, whether you're looking at the UFC, they're starting to work towards having some new regulations on cutting weight. But looking at the state of New York, not only cutting weight, but when it comes to, you know, insurance and all those different things, which applies, and some people don't realize this, not only to professional fighters, but to amateurs. How different is it for you as someone who fought before the regulations in New York were in place, and now that they are in place, how different is it?
It's not so different. My insurance I use through Starbucks, so I still got the same insurance.
You get a free cafe latte if you win?
No, I just. But luckily for Starbucks, they have decent insurance for what it is.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? Hey, if I were working around hot steam, I'd make sure I had good insurance because I would burn the hell out of myself.
Yeah. But there's a long story behind it. It's like, what is it? The CEO or former CEO Howard Schultz, his dad had trouble getting insurance while he was growing up, so that's why he made sure all his employees could have insurance. That's
quick
rundown.
You learn two new things every day.
Yeah, I didn't know.
So that's why he gave us insurance.
I worked at Starbucks for a long time, and I never knew that.
So funny enough, like that Obamacare had nothing to do with me because it actually made it worse because I was like, there was times where we could, like, for a year, especially if you're young, like, I'm not that old yet, so I didn't really need insurance at a certain point for like a year. And I'm like, I could take it out, and then the next year I can just have it back again.
And Obama made it worse for you. Thanks, Obama.
Yeah.
Damn you.
Well, apparently Trump's fixing that, right? So
we'll see what happens with that.
Yeah, who knows? Because those Obama plans are so messed up anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, when it comes
to
insurance, there are different things. And when it comes to fighters, now, when you're heading into a fight, and now you have fights, as you said, kickboxing, MMA, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, what kind of injuries throughout the time that you've been fighting have you actually had to deal with?
There's been a few. Like, I've hurt my like rib like over 5 years ago in the middle, well, before training for like a grappling tournament. And then I went into that grappling tournament like 2 days later and it popped right back out again. And I came in second place anyways, but freaking that shit hurt.
How long of a healing period was that after the rib?
It took like a couple of, like a year to feel normal again. But I was still training and still trying to do tournaments all the time.
I hurt my hand the other day, and I'm not sure how I did it, but it's like it's kind of bothering me. So I feel your pain.
Oh, geez.
All these things happen.
You know, Eric, yeah, it's funny when you're talking about Gianni Vellante the other day. I actually wrestled him, or you're talking about him earlier. I wrestled him when I was a junior. He was a senior. And that
really?
he was probably bigger in high school than he is now.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
He's a big dude. And when you look at him and you look into those beautiful, beautiful eyes of him, oh, man. See, now, Gianni Vellante, I've met briefly once, but he's one of those guys. What I like about some fighters is the personality that they have. And Gianni Vellante's personality is, I'm beautiful and you all need to deal with it. And that's amazing. And I love seeing them put it out there. I like seeing Aljamain, the Funk Master, certainly when he was fighting Brian Caraway leading up to that fight, going out there. Some people didn't like it, how he went after and saying, you know, talking trash about, you know, Misha Tate's wife, Brian Caraway, and all that stuff. You know, that was going on. But what has become obviously, and Conor McGregor, whenever you talk about MMA, he comes up, and so many other people do. In MMA, the people who have been the most successful, and whether that means victories or just making money, the people who have been the most successful are people who are able to build this kind of aura around themselves. Look at somebody like Clay Guida. Clay Guida has never fought a championship in the UFC. He's a fantastic college wrestler. He's a fantastic MMA fighter. He's a guy with cardio that doesn't quit. He's basically known as Captain Caveman with the hair bouncing around and everything.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
With you as an amateur fighter, is there a desire or a push, or do you want to try to create a persona for yourself? And if so, what is that?
My persona is just I'm just going to oppose my will on everybody, regardless of what happens. I'm just going to keep going.
When you take someone down, you're going to tell them, like, well, you're grappling, like in the middle of a fight, you're grappling on the canvas. Are you going to tell them, like, I'm going to put my balls in your face? Anything like you trash talk on your
face? Yeah, that's kind of a little ridiculous.
I've interviewed one fighter who he's on a mission that he calls it something doggy. I forget what he calls it.
But he's
on a mission to, and he's a pro fighter and king of the cage. He's on a mission to, when he gets in there and gets someone flat on their back, he wants to put his balls in their face.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
See, now, if I were a professional fighter or an MMA fighter, if I got ever into top position, I would just whisper into the guy's ear, like, if you win, I'm yours forever. And he would definitely let me.
Oh, wow.
Reverse psychology. See, I'm thinking on a different level than most people are. And, well, that's pretty much my life, is thinking on different levels than most people are. And I think that that's a certain possibility. So here's a question that, and it's out of left field. I understand that, although with this conversation, the awful direction that it's gone, it makes sense. When you're in, you know, when you are on the ground, whether you're in top control, whether you're in side control, whether you're on the bottom, what is going on? Is there ever any conversation there? Is someone telling you, like, you need to quit, I'm going to beat the hell out of you? Or is it just a perfect focus? My wife has wondered that sometimes, like, I wonder if they're saying anything to each other while they're on the ground.
I'm usually in the zone, I'm not going to lie. The only time I was thinking something was, like, when the guy got me in a good submission at one loss at MMA, I was like, damn. I was like, as soon as he got me, I was kind of wanting to be like, dude, that was fucking good. I was like, holy shit, how'd you do that?
And that happened.
I told him that. I was like, man, you're fucking good.
In your submission loss,
in the middle of the fight,
what did he get you with? What did he finish you with?
He caught me in an armbar, but he trying to sneak it in. He got it in, like, and like as he flipped me over, he caught me like in a weird angle.
Mm.
And then like I wasn't used to the gloves at that time. It was my first MMA fight, and then usually I get out of those arm bars, but I wasn't used to those getting caught, my arm caught with the gloves. And I'm
right.
Like, fuck. I'm really trapped in here. I'm like, fuck, I got to drive home, so I'm like, shit, I better just fucking tap out.
Now, when your first fight and you lose it by submission, do you think that you ran a risk of trying to overcompensate by going and training only ground stuff and forgetting about your stand-up? Or how do you deal with a loss where you lose on the ground like that?
That loss, it had to do with me not having enough confidence standing up. Like, this guy had no stand-up game, and I didn't realize that. I had a feeling, but I didn't know enough. And then, like, that's why I went to kickboxing for a while, just to make sure my stand-up, I was very confident in my stand-up.
And I think because that kind of goes back to the point that we were talking about before, where in the amateur ranks especially, you don't have a lot of tape to look at. You don't have, you know, this guy hasn't fought on Fox. He hasn't fought on FS1. He hasn't fought on pay-per-view. It's difficult to find out exactly what to expect. So, yeah, so you've gone through that now. So does that change mm-hmm. your perspective for this upcoming fight that you have with Triton?
No, it doesn't. I know what I got to work on. I got to stick to my own game plan. It's all about me making the pace, not letting the other person control the pace.
So you want to gain the center of the cage and push forward.
Yeah, that's it. It goes to the ground, to the ground, but so I was more of a jiu-jitsu guy when I first started off anyways.
Right.
Okay.
Just being small and everything.
You should also wink at him a lot and just kind of throw him off his game and be like, blow kisses maybe. See, sometimes you blow a kiss and that's it. The guy's like, I'm going to knock this son of a bitch out. But other times you blow a kiss and he's like, I don't want to be in here with him. So it's a 50-50 shot. And I'm just saying you should probably take a chance at it.
Either he's going to run away or he's going to get pissed off.
Oh, man.
But, yeah, and either way, you still might win. If he gets pissed off, he could do something stupid. If he runs away, you definitely win. So win-win, right? So winks. Add the winks into your repertoire.
Oh, my God.
No, that's Eric, not God. I'm good.
That's funny.
Awesome. So if you could finish him on Friday night, what is one way that, like, you could pick out of any other option, any option you want, what is the way you're going to finish him?
Just by opposing my will, that's it. I can't predict the future. I just know what I worked on. If, like, I end up getting a guillotine on him, I get the guillotine on him. If I get the armbar, I get the armbar. If I finish with my hands or my legs, I finish with my hands or legs.
Well, when you're in practice, is there a move that you are sparring with your teammates? Is there a strike or a kick or a choke that normally you sneak in on everyone that kind of finishes them?
Well, this camp, I feel like I've been getting my ass kicked the whole time, to be honest.
Well, they say sometimes, getting beat up is usually a good sign. It gets you tougher and you're kind of ready for it when you get in there instead of beating up a bunch of cupcakes all the time.
Yeah,
and,
I definitely did not train with any cupcakes. If I called them cupcakes, they would kick my ass.
Of course they would, and you're answering in the proper fighter way where, hey, I get to win any way that I can, but like I just said to my son when I put him to sleep, I said, what do you want to do when you go to sleep? When you dream, what do you want to do? He said, I want to go to outer space with Buzz Lightyear and my teddy bear. And I said, all right, then that's what you're going to do. So if you were to fight this guy in a dream, how's that fight going to go in that dream? How are you going to finish him?
Finish him with the least amount of pain on myself.
Oh, my God. No, no, no. You have to answer the question for real. If you were all to right, finish right. him in a way that, like, if you were to predict a fight, and I know you're not predicting it, you're not saying, like,
yeah,
I'm
going
to
yeah.
beat this guy. I'm not. I'm going to finish
say a left
him
hook.
With a oh,
left
hook.
It'll be a left hook.
Okay.
Just,
we'll be watching for
the body.
It.
Anywhere.
Oh, I
anywhere.
Like the body. I like a
yeah.
punch or a kick that lands to the body, and then, like, 2 seconds later, the guy goes, oh, shit, no.
Yeah.
No, and he just stopped.
The big
river
the
left hook.
Shuts you down.
You remember, like, Alistair Overeem with that kick to the body of Brock Lesnar.
Oh, God, yeah.
And Brock Lesnar, like, 4 seconds later just went, oh, shit, no. Nope, I'm done.
Yep.
Back to the
and
WWE
you know Brock
with
Lesnar
me.
Was spitting blood for a month after that.
He was. And Alistair was shitting roids for a month after that. Man, even that's what it comes down to.
Literally, oh my God. I tell you what happened.
Awesome. Well, I know I'm excited. I know Eric's excited. We're all excited
yeah.
to watch you fight Friday night. We wish you the best
Thank
of
you.
Luck, Steve. How can someone find you on social media if they want to follow you?
They can find me on Instagram at Hero217S or Steve War Hero Eno with E-N-O, not I-N-O, on Facebook.
Are you related to Brian Eno, the musician
and
songwriter?
No, I'm actually, my last name's Inoshima, but people used to call me Eno or Hero.
Oh.
That's how that all got started.
Okay.
It's like a nickname.
Okay, so you're not just trying to jump on Brian Eno's name.
No, I don't even know,
yeah.
didn't even know who that was.
Well, you can look him up now, and you'll be like, really? Because you'd have to go back to the 70s and early 80s to even know who the hell he was. But
actually,
great song.
Funny enough, like, think of the 70s or even before that, people always get my first name confused. They're like, oh, you're Steven, right? That's the proper way to say your name? I'm like, no, I was named that Steve McQueen. Just Steve. Remember the bullet?
Yeah.
Okay.
Steve McQueen
my parents
was
a big
badass,
fan, so.
Man.
Yeah.
Well, they named you well because Steve McQueen a badass, and you're a badass as well, sir.
Awesome. Well, Steve, Steve McQueen,
yeah.
that should be your nickname. Awesome. well, it was a pleasure having you on here.
Thank
look
you.
Look forward to seeing you fight. For those who are interested in joining us tomorrow night at 9 p.m. we're going to have the
mm-hmm.
atomweight champion, Julian DeCourcy, coming on the show as well.
Oh, nice.
Plus Dan Halen, who's fighting Eric Ott in the co-main event. So we have two of the main event and the co-main event fighter on the show tomorrow night at 9 p.m. So be sure to tune in, everyone, if you're listening. Call in with some questions if you got some. Check it out. Thursday night's weigh-ins at 5 p.m. We'll be streaming them on MyMMAnews.com. We'll be streaming them live on Facebook.
Oh,
and then Friday night, we can't stream them because they're going to have them on FlowCombat.com. But we will be updating you live with Twitter and Instagram, all that fun shit. So,
yeah, that definitely linked me up on the streaming of the weigh-ins.
Yeah,
no,
definitely.
Yeah, no,
it's
gonna be.
Yeah,
I'm going to be watching those weigh-ins and fat shaming everyone who comes in an ounce over. I'm going to be like, oh, fatty. As I sit here, like I said, at 205 pounds, and that may be an understatement, I'm still going to fat shame the people weighing in.
I'm just going to see emojis of donuts flying across the screen from Eric.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, no.
I'll be one of those.
Just know, when you weigh in, when you're up there and that camera's on you, just know that I'm sitting here watching it and going, he could have had one less. He could have had one less bite of mashed potatoes at Thanksgiving, and he would have been much better. But nope, he decided not to do that. I'm a horrible person, and thankfully, I hope you never punch me in the face because you are a badass and I'm not.
Awesome. For those of you who want to get tickets to come watch Steve, the War Hero, fight Friday night, you can go to accmma.com or ktfo.com. You get tickets there. Pick his name. Scroll down. You pick Steve's name and then buy some tickets. Be sure to come watch and fight and win. Should be exciting.
Should be
you know what order you are in the fight card yet or no?
What?
Do you know where you land in the order of fights?
I'm probably in the beginning, somewhere in the beginning,
okay.
Just because I'm. It's just I know I have to wear shin guards and stuff, so it's probably one of the beginner types MMA fights.
Okay, the novice fights, awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, so yeah, so, we're not going to get a whole lot of ground and pound unless you want to just punch him in the gut the whole time.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Well, that's okay. That hurts.
I'm sure it does. Yeah. If you
everything hurts,
people are doing that to me all day.
You guys do hurts. There's not a thing that happens inside of there that doesn't hurt. There's not like a happy thing that happens inside of the cage. And for people,
I'm not gonna lie. Sometimes when you get the groin shots, I'm just like, just keep going. I'm already in the rhythm. It's fine. I got a cup on.
Oh, the groin shots are the only ones that I enjoy. Those are the ones that make me feel good. For anyone who hasn't been to an amateur fight, a professional fight, I'm going to tell you right now, this merger that's going on that's created Triton. Sorry, I was going to say Titan,
mm-hmm.
and that's not right. Triton with KTFO and ACC. This is really the best way to watch a fight. You're not going to break the
definitely.
Bank. You're going to spend a reasonable
yeah.
amount to see some fantastic
kids.
Fights. Oh yeah, and there's going to
yep,
be
family friendly.
There's going to be
super
family
friendly.
There's going to be, and as we've talked about earlier, there's going to be some dumbasses who get in there who have no business being in there against
yeah.
someone who does have business being in there, and that
mm-hmm.
is a recipe for some beautiful stuff.
Yeah.
Get some big
for
old
sure.
knockouts or some
that,
good
yeah,
submissions.
It's one way to learn that MMA is not for you. Getting in there with someone who really should be when you shouldn't be. And you know what? In the amateur world, that's something that happens. So that's, you know, as we were talking about earlier, hey, we'd like to see in the amateur MMA world really a baseline for people to get into it. But until that exists, you're going to see some people who shouldn't be in there against people who should. And personally, those end up with some of the best finishes you're going to see. Even if they're not the most fair and delightful, they're still going to be good finishes.
Yeah.
Definitely. I got one last question before we get
yeah,
going.
Go ahead.
Steve, after your fight, I'm sure you got a couple black eyes maybe and stuff like from your last fight.
Mm-hmm.
And you show up at Starbucks, start pouring coffee. People asking questions, like you jump in the alley or something. I'm sure they.
Oh
cute.
Yeah, whatever. It happens. You know, it's like the people that are regulars understand what I do. Someone else that asks you randomly, I'm like, yeah, I just got in a cage and fought. I just want my only concern ever is like being okay to be able to play with my nephews and my niece.
Okay. Awesome.
Right.
Well, hey, good luck. Best of luck to you on Friday night.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. We're looking forward to seeing your fight. I'm sure I'll be there early, so I'll chat with you beforehand.
Right.
And
awesome.
Like I said, ladies and gentlemen, tune in tomorrow night at 9 p.m. I'll put a link up on the Facebook page, Twitter, all that fun stuff for Jillian DeCourcy and Dan Halen. Eric, you're more than welcome to join us again tomorrow night if you're free. That'll be at 9 p.m. It'd be awesome. And then,
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I may have to do some of my naked dancing. That's what I do on Wednesdays.
Explains why we're going to get snow at the end of the week.
Well, yeah, when I dance naked, it snows. It doesn't matter if it's August or July. Snow is coming when I dance naked.
Just don't catch the flurries in your mouth is all I have to say.
Oh, boy.
No. Don't worry about me catching them on my mouth. You know what I'm saying?
Well, be sure to follow us on social media at mymmanews.com and myself at giblitz77, J-I-B-L-I-T-Z 77. Eric, how can they find you on social media?
Eric Dame. My last name is spelled D-E-H-M. That's M as in Michael, although my name isn't Michael, so that's kind of confusing. Anyway, just Eric Dame. Find me on there, and I'm on Facebook and Twitter and well, I'm probably still on MySpace. I don't think I ever deleted that page. I don't know what my password is, so I don't think I can even get into it anymore. So, yeah, add me on MySpace. Why not?
Yeah, it's funny because I still get shit for MySpace, but yet I haven't been on that thing in 20 years.
Well,
yeah.
I think my MySpace email was on America Online, which, yeah, that tells you right there.
Right? Awesome. Well, ladies and gentlemen, as always, it's a pleasure. I hope you guys enjoyed the show. Thank you to Steve coming on the show.
All right, thank you, guys.
Thank you, Eric, for coming on and co-hosting. It was a pleasure.
You're
best
welcome.
Of luck to you.
All right.
And we will catch you guys on the flip side.
All right, I'm good night, guys.
Later.